So we have Peter Wolfman over here. That he wasn't here last time, so we're gonna introduce over here. So this is
Malachi Walker.
Duan Sarwar.
Rebecca Wolf.
Jane Trombley.
Okay. Now, since we're waiting for like a commissioner for a long time, people have been asking for, and finally we got one. And now, yeah, I have a question about like, what is your goal for 2020?
And that's something that I had a question about before we go with that, because I've never been to a commissioner's meeting. So what's the mission statement, or what's the mission of this forum, where we have elected officials, we have people in the audience? Because I don't know the history of the police committee. I don't know what the mission is. So before we can make goals and objectives, are you looking for goals and objectives of this committee, or are you looking goals and objectives of the agency?
Actually, I'm looking bold. I mean, what's your focus?
Okay. So I'm not sure what our goals are of this committee. The purpose of the committee, what are you looking for in our side, in our collaboration? So that's the first thing. Now, the goals and objectives have been made by the administration of the police agency, and we have that, and the officers understand that, and we're going forward. So we could share the goals and objectives for this year that the administration has, that I know that I've approved, and we'll go forward. But I just was wondering about, I just wanted to clarify, I'm not sure on the committee here and what,
oh, yeah, going
what's our
forward,
purpose.
Yeah, just, like you said, the current goals right now that you're aware of, what are they? And basically, I think what I was just asking, what's the current goal that you've already discussed with
Okay. So,
So our police policy has that the chief in January of every year published to all the members what my goals and objectives for the department are. That wasn't on the agenda that you sent to me.
Yeah.
However, I can email them to you. But there's things, for example, the completion of our policy that was set forth 2.5 years ago. That's one of our objectives to complete in 2020. There's departmental things like that. There's things like we finally want to have our open house now that the painting's completed in the station for the public sometime this spring. There was a completion of some other items.
There was the new laws.
Okay, the other thing is to try to segue into the bail reform and the discovery laws the best that we can, and to try to plan ahead for what those needs are going to be for the department. I think I had about 7 or 8 objectives on there, but those are the main ones. Of course, there's the standard ones with crime rates and trending and things like that.
Okay. You got the report for January?
Yeah, January. Just put together some stats for January. We had 601 separate incidents, which puts us on track to be. January's hard to really track because it's a winter month. It's not a high activity month. That would put us on course to be somewhere around the same amount of calls as last year. It's hard after 1 month to project. We had 44 arrests. That's lower than last year. And 215 traffic tickets, which is almost double of what we did last year, probably owing to the weather. So that puts us on track to write up almost more, twice what we wrote last year. But again, it's January. It's hard to project the rest of the year just based on 1 month. But the activity's good. Staffing's good. And that's the only statistical thing I have for January.
How about the drug control officer? You know that he's retiring.
Yeah, so you made me read this 16-page everything about dog control officers. So I guess there was the dog control officer retired, and we have 30 days to fill a replacement.
Right.
an alderman had asked me about it, I said, yeah, we'll do, you know, whatever we can temporarily if that's what's legally required. But I'm going to tell you, after looking at these requirements, man,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it has to, there's a lot here. Everything from having an adequate shelter to treatment of the animals. I don't know that the police department's best suited to take over for any protracted period of time. Just the ability to transport vehicles is tough. To just put them, you have to have a container. Yeah, and also equipment to capture stray dogs. I don't know. If we don't have a lot of those things. I don't know that you want to invest a lot of those things in the department and training. You know, I'm down for whatever you guys come up with, but I'm just telling you, maybe a stopgap, we can figure out something. But long term or more than a couple months, I think the council's got to figure out something else.
The problem you're going to have is properly equipping, properly training, and properly vaccinating the officer. So the officer will need a rabies vaccination, which is $750 for just one officer. We had this problem when I was chief in Stockport, where we lost the dog control officer. And then at that point, there will be an oversight and an audit from the state. Will come down and audit and make sure that you are properly equipped. You have a proper vehicle to transport. We would then contract with the Humane Society at so much per night. That would be, so if no one claims the dog, it's the municipality that has to take on that responsibility. So there's a lot of pieces to that, that if the committee wants to go forward with it, we can, but I would venture to say, in just a fuzzy snapshot of that, probably upfront costs without the training, the proper training for it, $750, probably about $1,500 to $2,000 just to set it up without a car. You'd have to take a car and then be able to slide in a big, what do you call those?
Kennels,
right. And we would have to have that. So we would have to outfit an old car or find a way to make that adjustment. It can be done, but like anything else, at a cost.
Right, plus policy change for the union. The union would have to, membership would have to agree to put on an additional duty that's not in.
With that training. And the training is 3 to 5 days, but it's not offered all the time. So I can get my contact from the state to see when the next training is.
So the previous dog control officer was not in any way connected with the police department. But what city agency or whatever was it?
It was contracted out
by many municipalities. Probably about half of the towns in Columbia County.
Right.
He was contracted out.
So I wonder what those other towns are doing for their.
Oh, we're not alone. Oh, absolutely, we're not. Yeah. And I don't know. I haven't asked around. Because I know out in Chatham used him. Chatham and Ghent used him. So there were two towns right there that used him. So this came quick.
Doesn't look like you got much of a choice according to the law. It says the municipality must appoint somebody.
Yeah, I think there has to be one.
If you guys come up with somebody we can help, we'd be on board. But and I don't know, there's a time limit too, before 30 days. Yeah.
30 days, yeah.
Yeah, dog control had no, we had no, like, affiliation with them.
Not much help, sorry.
Yeah.
We can get that equipment. That could be bought. But it's the vaccination that we'd have to start, whoever is going to be that. And
which could potentially be something that's covered by their health insurance?
Nope.
It's
from the municipality. We have to bear the cost of that. And if we don't, and then the officer gets bit and there's rabies,
well, yeah,
then the liability is with us on workman's compensation. So there's no good deed goes unpunished. Something so simple as let's hire a dog, you know, a dog officer is not as easy. They're actually peace officers. They're not police officers. But police officers can do it if you decide to do that. So Stockport has that. Yes.
You're not saying me so much.
No,
the
So these other municipalities are up against the same deadline, mm-hmm. up against the same requirements. Might there be an individual who's going to surface?
There's an individual who is separate from Greenport, and I can't think of her name. What's that?
Pinkowski.
Yes, and she has her, she contracts. She's the other person in this area that contracts. So we can try to get a contract to see what her costs would be for that and see if it equals what we had, the present contract that we had with West. That's a possibility. We could do that. So that's something within...
That seemed to be worth exploring.
Okay. We'll make that attempt. I don't know what position she's in and how many contracts she's going to take on by herself.
But it would at least be worth talking to her also to find out, like, what, I mean, there must be more than one person in all the counties who, like, has whatever the skills.
Wes had a corner.
Mm-hmm. The council has authorized Tracy Duane to reach out to all the other dog enforcement officers in the vicinity. So that's where we're starting.
Okay.
So ultimately, we're responsible.
Okay.
All right. Now, agreement for the Columbia Green Shared Service Bond.
Okay, so we established the shared services midway in 2015 and had a 4-year agreement that expired at the end of 2019. So the request is on your plate at the City Council to re-up for another year on a year-to-year basis with the to enter the agreement and sign off on it. I've reviewed it. I've reviewed our performance over the last 4 years. I would encourage the City Council and recommend from the point of public safety to sign off on it and to agree to join for another year and evaluate it at the end of every year. I can answer any questions you have about it, any concerns you have, but strictly from, as an insurance policy and strictly from a public safety perspective, I think it's a good investment.
What's the rate?
How much are we spending? It's varied. I've got some statistics for you, what we paid out. Here, do you want to get one for everybody? What we did is we took the tanks.
Okay. How long have we been using the service?
April of 15. Yeah.
It's only this. Okay. We had our own team prior to that.
So can you give an overview of just like what are the circumstances under which they...
Okay. I'll give you a snapshot. The last 3 years, for example, I was able to get, with some help, get some of the statistics together. I looked at the deployments over the last 3 years since 2018 and an overview of the department and its training. In 2018, there was one deployment the entire year in the city of Hudson. That was in June on the 200 block of State Street. Where a warrant was executed and a quantity of drugs, ammunition was seized, and a suspect was arrested who had previous possession of stolen pistols before. See, when the, it's hard to start this discussion, when the shared services team is used, it's because it has to meet a certain threshold. Every time you use the shared services in this context, it's considered a use of force. So you have to justify the use of the team. In this instance, in 2018, it's because all the threat, all the elements of a threat were there, and that's why it was utilized. And that goes with every time you deploy it. So this shared services team is not strictly for execution of warrants, but also rescue work, all sorts of emergency situations. They've been trained in rappelling and rope rescue, and that was just used to retrieve a deceased person last month. The next year, in 2019, we had one deployment in the entire year, and that was for a drug warrant on Frederick Street in May, to which this quantity of cocaine and crack was seized. Again, the person targeted in that investigation had a history of violence. 2020 so far, we had one deployment on Union Turnpike, which was actually a Sheriff's Department investigation, in which drugs were seized. So over the last three years, we've had three deployments within our city limits. Over the 3 years, each individual officer, which Hudson has four members of this team, four officers. In 2018, each officer received about 224 hours of specialized training. 2019, each officer received 376 hours of specialized training. And this year, 2020, each officer has received about 48 hours. So they get all sorts of specialized training, which could be helpful in different emergency situations, everything from first aid to clearing rooms, active shooter drills, things like this. So I don't want to be misleading and think that the shared services is only used for search warrants or arrest warrants. It's used in a whole variety of different emergency situations. For example, if there was something that happened in our school, the shared services team would go into action to address the active shooter or at any of our gatherings here, the hospital or the train station or anything. So that's been our use. I think you can see the expenditures here in terms of officer overtime. I think it's a fairly modest price for the kind of extra training and insurance that the officers will receive. The alternative is, I also weighed that out, what are the alternatives if we just don't do it, if we don't participate? Because remember, there's been a SWAT-style team in the city of Hudson for about 25 years. And if I take you back to 2014 when I suspended SWAT, it's because we didn't reach the training threshold demanded by the state and accreditation. So we suspended it. We had something like 12 members. Now we have four, but the four are better trained.
So if there wasn't this shared services thing, the police force would go through different training or extra training than it does, and there would be members on the police.
I don't think. See, we couldn't maintain a SWAT team by ourselves, Hudson Police. We could never make the state standards. It's too expensive. You know, they were able to get by for many years. God bless them, they were able to get by many years with training and doing it on our own, but the requirements now are much different, and there's no way we could meet that threshold. That's why the shared services concept worked for me, worked for us. So now we train fewer officers, they're better trained, better equipped. For example, Hudson Police was not able to, on its own, get grant money for a certain equipment. Now, as the shared services thing attached to the sheriff's office, basically all their equipment that they get is paid for by grant money. Hudson could never afford the kind of equipment they have, communications and body armor and things like this.
Is there a cost for training, special training, or no?
Well, what happens is we change their schedule. We have monthly trainings, and then I think in the summer we have a long protracted 1 week training. So we changed our schedules to cut down the payment over time.
It almost seems like we're belittling, you know, our own men right now that is shared services to me. I mean, we're fully equipped. I think we, you know, fully employed the department. And I don't know, I just don't see.
I know what you're saying. The problem is, to do it on our own, HPD to do it on our own, we just can't do it. That's why it was suspended in the first place. It's not fair to, it's more unfair to our guys if they don't have the adequate training and equipment that they need. And the equipment we have today is much better than when we were back in 2014. You know, the stuff we have now is makes it safer for our members.
And I think also, what's happening in policing is also happening in EMS and happening in fire departments. We're fire departments now with an activation of certain fires in certain places, there's automatic mutual aid. Same with EMS, there is now a new system where EMS agencies help each other out and move towards a line when they're busy, because the amount of money it costs in first responder world to provide a service now is very, very expensive. And so that's a piece of the shared services coming in, is that you're properly equipping, properly training for specific instances. I think the question comes of those specific instances and the tactical pieces to that, that I think the community, we need to have a better conversation about. Is not as much as a service, but understanding the tactics of it.
The last few years, technical approaches have not really been needed in, you know, as before. And so, I mean, the conversation definitely needs to be brought to the forefront. Because, I think a lot of what's been going on in Hudson, you know, just having a full capacity of officers, employed, I think we can pretty much handle, you know, I'm not saying that we don't need, assistance in doing certain things, but, I think we just really need to look into this with the shared services. That's just, my personal opinion.
Does this include fire and EMT, everything, or just the police?
It's just police.
This is just police. Yeah. But I just use that analogy of share. First responder world is sharing a lot more services than they did 5, 10, 15 years ago. You did not see the amount of sharing going on. And that includes policing. There's a lot more sharing.
So can you talk a little more about the tactics and about what, how does shared services respond to communities, specific communities, and what is their, do they have training that's specific to communities that they are going to go into?
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that.
I was just going to say the normal police officer on the street, officers coming out of the police academy and the officers that you see doing patrol, their training level to be able to do operations going to the school, doing search warrants like that, they just don't have that ability, they don't have the training, and they have 200 additional training hours, each officer's, just to do tactical training so that no one gets hurt on either side. You see what I'm saying? It's all extra training that, I don't have the training that these SWAT members have. I wouldn't be able just to go willy-nilly and go in there and start taking bad guys down the systematic way that they do in order to keep the community safe and themselves safe. So it's very detailed. It's very elite force, if you will, to deal with the stuff in a proper way. I mean, if I took a team together, me and a couple guys off the street, the outcome might not be as successful.
So what happens in an instance where something, let's say if we didn't contract and we didn't have the shared services, what would be the next
good
step?
Question. What happens is if we didn't participate, we would be reliant on the state police tactical team, which is fine, and an elite and high level of training. The problem that concerns me as your police chief is the response time. These things happen quick, and having a local team gives you a local response and local familiarity. Our team drills, at local areas, and be more familiar with the school layout, be more familiar with the layout within our community. And I just think that they would be on scene faster. And I think that speed of the arrival, the response time is an extra little extra measure of safety for us.
We have, right now, the chief has control, the commissioner has control.
Right.
We wouldn't have control of a New York State Police CERT team. Mm-hmm. None.
There is that control issue of if we're part of a team, we have a say at the table. We ask for mutual aid come in, they're doing it their way, even if we don't like it.
Huh.
And also responsibility. We sit here monthly to accept responsibility for things that we did right or wrong. And you would kind of lose that if an outside state or federal agency took over tactical response. So here I have to stand before the man every month and explain our actions. And I think the history of this team since 15, I don't think that I've been utilized them in an overbroad way. A lot of thought goes into when the team is deployed and for what reason.
That's the part I still don't totally understand, although I get it has to do with warrants. That's what you said.
There's a whole manner of things. There's everything from even hazmat responses, you know, to barricaded subject, to a mass casualty. It's a search warrant where the person, we have an arrest warrant, and a person's dangerous is only a percentage of the what this team trains for. They do everything from rappelling to extracting people from buildings, and you could have a train accident, and these guys would know how to respond much more than us.
Like all our search warrants, we don't use a SWAT for everyone, if that's what you're asking. We do like a matrix of, if okay, there's guns involved, there's certain levels, then that's when the chief and or commissioner, they decide, okay, we need a team. But we can do search warrants, and we do search warrants without SWAT.
All the time. If, for example, there's a use of the team on lower Union Street, I would have some say into that team, what happened, what ultimately happened, and why it was done, and I would have to sit here and explain it.
So, are you, Chief Moore, are you the decision maker if there's an incident that?
Yeah, that's the way the contract's written up. And so we partner with the Columbia County Sheriff and the Greene County Sheriff, and us three have this say-so in our own jurisdictions.
Okay. So you are the only person that makes the decision to call in this joint services team or not?
Right.
So commissioner can do nothing on that or not?
I don't know what the contract. I haven't seen the contract, so I don't know.
Yeah, the shared services only stipulates me, but I answer to the commissioner, so we would be in communication.
Right, he would inform me of what's going on and what's happening.
How many times did you say it was utilized last year?
Last year, once. In 19, Malachi, it was
once.
Yeah, in May on Frederick Street.
And just financially, so this chart is about the training hours, right?
No, this is overtime. In other words, what we did, we took our four SWAT members, and then and actually that's not true because I think in 15 and 16 we had five. Mm-hmm. So I checked how much overtime was spent allocated exactly for SWAT usage, so that gives you an idea above their normal salary what this would cost.
You said you had four?
Four now, and I think when this chart started in 15 and 16, I think we had five.
Have to be utilized. You know what I mean, I've been saying this for a long time too, as far as, you know, just a community policing, I think is huge. I mean, we really need that in Hudson. We really need to go back to basics with, just bridging the gap between officers and just community leaders, officers and, just anybody who's, able to, just be informative with it, but I'm saying community policing, just officers getting involved, just doing different things, just trying to, we live here. This is our community. We're not separate. It's not the police in Hudson. It's it's the community. We're a community. So I think we all should figure out, just some things we should be able to do to, make sure that, certain things maybe won't occur. Not saying that it's not going to occur. God forbid if something happened this year. I mean, I know it's, nice weather starting now, but we know what happens with nice weather. But I just think if we, just start there, maybe start trying to see what we can do to maybe bring some of the officers into the youth center, bring some of the officers into just, some of the things keeping them involved in the community.
We're lucky here because there's 23 of us. I would say about 85% of us graduated from Hudson. We have families here. We go to school, our kids. So we're lucky. We're not like Albany or something where you get strangers from outside. We're like all locally, for the most part, right, from here in the community.
And that's even a greater reason to even do it. But we all know each other. Everybody knows each other.
I don't think there's a... I think we've seen, especially in 17, that there is an issue with guns, illegal guns, in the community, with more being seized just not that long ago. And what happens is, we don't really want a SWAT team, but there's occasions where you need tactical training for safety. And I think given the fact that there are illegal guns out there, and we've demonstrated, we brought them in here and showed you how many guns we seize, it's dangerous. And I think a deployment averaging one or two deployments over the course of the year shows that we're not taking this lightly, that we're not being overbroad in our application of this to chase people down or harass people on minor warrants. We really, the officers, and I credit them, that are part of this team and their leaders, they sit down and they do a real threat assessment to see everything from, are there school children nearby? What are the odds that someone's going to have a gun here? What's the person's history of violence? And unfortunately, every once in a while, it hits on all points of that matrix where we have a bad, very bad person, and we need to use these things that are scary and unsettling in a neighborhood. And I want you to know that we're aware of it. The thing is, if we had had multiple deployments, I think you'd have a really good cause. But I think that I've used everything thoughtfully and with a lot of thought and a lot of planning before we utilize something like this.
That's why I said I applaud the police department. They've been doing an excellent job. And that's why I said it almost seems like we belittling them, bringing in a whole other tactical team where we utilized them one time last year. And I'm just asking, how many guns did they seize?
Over the course of the year?
Last year.
I'll get you that. I think we just had eight in one arrest. It was eight, yeah, but I don't know what the total was for the year.
In that setting, was it that? In one setting, was eight.
It was eight in one, and
eight illegal handguns in one bus that they did not too long ago.
And the SWAT came in
and the
shared
services. And it was with the state police.
Right.
But
I think also the whole idea of community policing, I hear what you're saying, and part of the mayor's administration was asking me to come in to assist with a collaborative effort for identifying needs and for the community and identifying needs for the police department, kind of like an independent person coming in. So I just asked the committee to give me some time to take a snapshot of where I think we are. And then give ideas to have a better understanding. So that's what, it's just going to take me time to meet everybody and to kind of go on a listening tour first.
One constituent asked me why the police officers are not on foot in the city, and as they are, many other smaller.
As I've told the last police committee and the one before that, we log all of our hours. We are on foot. We are on bicycle. We have a dozen officers trained. When we're above minimum coverage, we have orders out to be on foot or bicycle. So they're out there. We track their hours.
Yeah, like today was a really nice day, and they call out at all the different, they were at the 7th Street Park. They were on Warren Street. Each time they call out where they're at. So today, just like every day, they call out wherever they feel like they might be needed, or there's a crowd, or they want to just walk around or be noticed. So they do, that's daily on their radio logs.
Okay, so you're saying there's like a daily beat?
The guy will be assigned. If you had our sheet, it says foot patrol officer whoever every day.
Same officer, same beat?
Nope, the officers change. So if you're doing foot patrol one day, and someone else is getting the burden of the calls, they kind of switch out. So another officer would do the calls one day, and then the different officer, they switch it up so that one officer doesn't get burnt out doing all the work, or someone doesn't get burnt out walking all the time, or whatever. So they do change it up, and it is daily all the time. They're required to put it on their sheets. So.
And that's something of a snapshot we can get for the hours of walking patrol for you to show that. I think that's something that the community needs to know. Absolutely. So we can adjust our reports as we start to have this conversation here to show.
Okay. After for the bail reform and discovery.
You're moving right along, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Sorry.
We'll talk about it.
I was the former older person that drafted the resolution that you're discussing. And before you move on, I just would like to ask, have you read it or been presented with it? Are you familiar at all with the resolution and the amendments for the shared services agreement?
All right, we'll talk about it later.
Well, I thought maybe some insight as to the impetus of the amendment that you're discussing. If you would like to know why we did it as a council. I mean, Tiffany was here too. We sat together and
do it at the end, right?
The reason
at the end. Well, right now you can talk now.
Okay, sure.
With the bail reforms one and the discovery, I mentioned in January because it was all brand new, and now we're only 1 month into it. I just think it's something we should be concern ourselves with down the road. Right now, my staff, my clerical staff, is putting in a lot of time on the discovery requirements, and to the point where Betty Scott sometimes comes in on her day off so we can meet our daily discovery requirement for the DA's office. I have some concerns. I think down the road we're going to have to look at our staffing and figure out how we're going to meet this requirement, because we're going to get into a busy season with a lot more calls, more arrests, more discovery to organize and get together on a short timeline. We're no different than any other department or municipality that's going through this right now. Bail reform, discovery, sealing cases. This is all extra administrative work that has been placed on us. It's kind of like an unfunded mandate from the state. So we're going to track this. I'm putting it on the record every month as we go along, unless it gets better, that this might have real concerns, considerations by the end of the year if we can't make the legal requirement to get this stuff in, categorized, and over to the DA's office in time. It's a big thing.
One arrest could take 2 to 3 hours of processing for the poor police clerk in the morning because of the new rules and recordings and this and that and everything.
And if this spills over to your officers, that's less patrol. You know, we don't want that. So we'll have to figure it out. But I'll keep you posted on that.
All right. The speed trap they have on that. Why is like nothing on it? You could put like, you know, we always have problem with the truck route. So if you put a sign, I mean that sign over there, if you put like truck route, so can we use that?
So the issue is the trucks are coming off the route?
Off the route, yeah, they're going everywhere. So, you know, so if you put a sign over there, truck...
Well, there are truck route signs.
Because that thing is that the street trap is like, it's not working.
The what?
The street sign, I think.
It's the sign.
Oh, yeah, so you want more signage for truck route?
Yeah.
That's DPW's, okay. I think.
Oh, that's DPW?
Well...
I thought that's a police one.
No, it is. The signage is our deal, but what... I'm not following. You're asking for more signage to
designate. What's the problem? You know, check that speed sign.
Oh, the message. The message,
yeah,
board.
Message
board. Oh, I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Our message board is put away right now. That's
you want that set up?
Yeah, the sign is a truck. Like you could say, like no.
It's sitting in the garage right now. You could set it up.
540 Columbia Street needs something. I mean, it's for the kids where they have the Head Start program there. Car with this.
Right, that little crosswalk there.
Yeah.
I think we had talked to Alderman Morandi about that, about the pedestrian crossing sign could help there.
Okay.
But I see what you're saying. Yeah, the variable message sign, they call it.
Yeah, that's what they call it.
The VMS.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can put it down there if you think that would help. And then, look, trucks are always straying off the truck route. It's terrible. We have so many trucks coming through town. On occasion, they go through. We don't. If we see them, we stop them. That's been our policy, but we don't see them all.
And we tried to look into putting a sign saying for the truckers, don't follow your GPS. Follow the signs through the city, and it has to be because it's a state road, it has to go through a whole procedure, and it has, because I was like, well, make it green or make it something different that catches your eye. Don't follow your GPS. Follow the city signs through.
Now, is that something that you would be involved in?
We were looking into this, and because it's a state road, it's not a city road, it has to go through a whole process through state DOT, and it's not a normal state sign that they would have, like a speed limit, or it's something that, when we were talking about it, they're like, oh, that's an interesting idea, but it's not standardized, and the state is approved sign.
So is it a thing, though, where a traffic officer could give a ticket and a fine and things like that? So yeah. Is that happening?
They do. Yeah.
They do.
Sometimes a warning, sometimes a ticket, depending on the circumstances.
Right. Some of them truly are working for a living, obviously, and truly do get lost, and it's nothing like intentionally. I mean, you kind of feel bad. The guy's trying to do a milk delivery, and he kind of gets screwed up. And but then some people do. They do get a ticket.
New business?
All right, public comment.
I have one. Thank you. In 2015, the state, I think it was at the end of 2014, the state was going to have new rules for, I think it was department accreditation, or it was SWAT team rules or something like that. Accreditation for the SWAT team, maybe accreditation isn't the right word, but requirements and training. So the training was going to be astronomical compared to what our budget was at the time, or the city's budget for that. So, and Chief, please, if I'm wrong.
No, you're right.
And I think it was 12 members at the time, and there was a slew of equipment. So we had access to a lot of guns, and I believe one vehicle, if I might be right.
Yes, yep.
If not two. It definitely wasn't two, it was one. So anyhow, we decided to, because it was going to cost the city so much to train these 12 officers and keep it in-house, I think it cut it to half, so it's six, I believe. And the training is double, if not in excess of that, from what it was in the prior years. And it lessened the equipment. So I believe after the chief liquidated, during the move to the new department building, liquidated the inventory, I think he got rid of a lot of unnecessary equipment and made a little bit of money, and got rid of a lot of old excess of body armor that we didn't have money for at the time. We had to pay for all that stuff. And now, because of the service agreement, we get grant money to pay for this equipment. And I believe one firearm that was, I think it was actually a machine gun, if I'm not mistaken.
So, well, Henry, may I interject?
Please.
So you're good on your memory. What happened was the standard accreditation standard 100-105 required that we have 15 fully trained members to be accredited. And the number of hours was 96 hours per operator. So we would have had to do 15 HPD members at nearly 100 hours apiece. We just didn't have.
We only have 23 guys, and
yeah, I mean,
quite frankly, 15 of them guys meet no standards.
And yeah, I'm not joining
it. 27, I believe. At the time, it's four more officers at the time to share this burden.
So that was why we.
Can I just ask one? So the accreditation is required by something to be accredited?
Yeah. If we're going to be accredited, if we're not, this department in the city opens itself up to all sorts of liability issues. We would be ineligible for certain grant monies because we're non-accredited and a lot of things like this. So we decided it would be better to suspend the SWAT team and really work towards our accreditation standards. And that's when the idea of the shared services came, where we could actually have a tactical team we would deploy less members, you know, 5 instead of 15, to the cost savings to the city, but still have the protection and the ability that a tactical team gives you.
Accreditation is a state standard of minimum standards and requirements that say that lowers your liability. Not all police departments are accredited because they can't fulfill the standards. Most of the time it's the building that they can't fulfill the standards. And so when you attain that, your insurance drops dramatically, your liability insurance. An example is each officer has to be trained so many hours a year. Because some police departments, there is no ongoing training for officers. They get their rookie academy, and that's it. So the state created this to help departments attain a certain minimum standards to be the most efficient police agency through training, through just how you hire, standard practices that you just can't hire. Oh, I know you. You're hired. Accreditation has a whole standard of hiring practices you must go through. So that's part of the changes in the requirements were through accreditation and the state standards.
Thank you. I have several questions. When you all was talking about shared services, two things I heard. You was talking about what you can control if the city has its own shared services rather than depending on the state.
Correct.
So what exactly do we control out of those shared services?
The control part is when we activate the team, how long the team stays on scene, what exactly tactically is done. The activation of a team, and the best way I could describe this is, this all began because in policing way back when, they were going into certain situations and literally people were dying because of the use of force instances. And so from that came this whole idea of specialized training for officers that ultimately became a TV show, SWAT, it became Hollywood, and now everybody has all these ideas of exactly what it is. I will tell you it's a specialized training that is scientific on how to approach certain situations where there was no training for officers at all, that science. And the constant training over and over again of high impact events has lessened the community members from dying, just being. And so with that, when an activation occurs, if we have a shared services, we are at the table with the sheriff's office in Greene County and Columbia County determining the science of how this is going to be dealt with. If we bring outsiders in with, and we don't have officers at the table, they will come to us and say, this is how we're doing it.
So when you say with figuring out the tactics and how to approach the situation, is mental crisis involved in part of that shared services, so if that situation was dealing with someone in a mental ill capacity?
Possibly, but what we're learning now is we've utilized SWAT, and then we're utilizing newer training for, and they call them CITs, crisis intervention technicians, to deal with mentally ill. We have in the rookie academy now, all rookies in the academies are taught training and dealing with mentally ill, because what we found is that officers didn't have the proper de-escalation training for that. So, yes, does SWAT have de-escalation training? Yes, they do. But the design of it is for potential high-impact events for use of force. And what the specialized training is giving them the discipline in the use of force.
I heard the chief say when the chair asked a question about in charge, so to speak, and you said because of the contract, it's you. So when that contract was signed, the commissioner wasn't appointed at that time, correct?
Yes, there was a commissioner.
Yeah, for 15 there was.
Gary.
Yeah, or was it Martha?
No, it was Gary.
Gary.
Okay. Well, after Gary,
when that
commissioner for a while.
It was Martha after Gary.
Yeah, when that was signed, there was a commissioner.
Yeah.
went after Martha, was it signed the same way, or did it get dark?
Say again, I'm sorry.
After Martha was the police commissioner, was the contract signed the same way, including commission?
It was only signed once, and it was a 4-year agreement. And now it's up for annual agreement.
When?
Now.
2015,
yeah.
It was signed.
It was signed April or June of 15.
Okay. And the police commissioner said he didn't see the contract. So when will he see the contract?
The new
contract.
Yeah, we'll get it for him immediately. Okay. I haven't seen it.
And Alderman Wolf was talking about community police on foot and so forth. And I had the same request, and people would just like to see you more outside of the school.
I agree too.
You know,
I would like to be out more.
Excuse me. As far as they have events in the senior Providence home, just things of that nature, seeing more police on foot. And when you said you have one on patrol and it's on the board, is that one officer and where he's designated, or is it one officer per ward?
No, I wish we had one per ward. That would be great.
We may only have two police officers working.
Yeah, if we have the standing orders, Tiffany, above minimum coverage, they're ordered to foot or bicycle.
Okay, and my last comment and question is about the boot on the cars.
Okay.
I remember we had Mayor Hamilton, she removed that, and I would like you all to take a look at that and think about that, because once a person is getting that ticket, they have to pay that ticket regardless. Putting that boot on is putting more of something that the person wouldn't be able to afford. It affects people of low income in particular. So they have to pay the ticket. It's like making it extra harder to pay the ticket. Now they have to pay for the boot, and then whatever other fines come after that, if they didn't pay that.
I think it's a city code, right?
I was going to say, you guys would have to change.
Well, I'm asking the police committee here to take a look at that, to make that change and consider that, because they have to pay a fine regardless. They don't need the boot as well.
Okay, sure.
I was just wondering, beyond...
Introduce yourself.
My name is Claire, cousin. I live in the Terraces. Beyond the equipment, because there was a lot of conversation about how much cost, how much equipment, and how much work it takes, you guys touched on what you consider before going into a SWAT style raid specifically, but I think it's important to understand that a lot of the community's distrust for SWAT, and the reason that there's so much pushback for SWAT, is not the emergency responses to saving somebody who's deceased or the school shooters. I think we're all in agreement that that's very important, and we want you guys to be trained in that. But there was one of the raids that took place right as kids were getting ready to get on the bus for school. If you guys did a risk assessment, how is that the best time possible for you to conduct a raid? Also, when you go into the raid, what's the procedure? If there's kids in the house, how fast are they removed? What happens after the raid to make sure that the trauma is addressed in not only the kids, the families, and the communities who witnessed the raid? Because that's, you can't build trust with the community or address distrust. If you come into a raid, there's a glorifying news article hours later, and that's it. The other question that I had was, I was curious where you, Mr. Volkman, stand on support or non-support or concerns for the shared services team.
Okay. So we'll go backwards on that, all right? I think the shared services team is a necessary component to policing for the safety of the community and the safety of the officers. The utilization of them is 1 to 2 a year. But what I see and I read in the paper, right, is the reaction of the community of not understanding exactly the purpose of it. And so the community is seeing this as something totally different than as police see it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I will work on to bring that collaboration, to have an understanding exactly what they do and exactly equipping them. Most people don't know, but a police officer here equipped probably about $5,000 of equipment on an officer. Every single officer costs the municipality $5,000. Now you take somebody with the specialized equipment that comes with SWAT, you're talking, what, $10,000 sometimes with that equipment on. And that equipment's on for a reason. It's a high impact event, a very dangerous situation that we, our intel tells us of what we have. And so as far as children in there, that's all part of the pre-planning that comes from Hudson Police to the shared services that are going to be involved. And ultimately, the commanding officer has to make the ultimate decisions.
But the follow-up, that's, I guess now, that's where I'm asking.
Okay, so
we come and talk,
that's the tactical I was talking about.
That, I'm not asking you to coddle a criminal, but the reality is these are people's parents. And thank God for Bronx Neighborhood that these kids now have different visits and see some of those correction officers in different light because of how they're able to continue their relationship with their parents. But if it wasn't for Promised Neighborhood, that only further created this monster behind the curtain that kids sometimes think of police officers.
True. So what I'm hearing then, you're saying is we have this SWAT team, okay, but we also have this whole idea of let's collaborate together for community policing. Let's look at different ideas so there's an understanding so we don't just focus on SWAT one or two times a year. That's 2 days out of 365 days a year or one day that seems to be separating the community. Let's work on the other 364 days.
Yes.
To bring that together. So when
trauma,
right, so when SWAT is activated, there's an understanding and there's better communication, however we can figure that out for the aftermath. And that's the tactical pieces that I think we can collaborate together. But that's something that we would have something as a police agency, and I think we have that responsibility to collaborate better. The aftermath.
What's that? I'm curious on
your
opinion.
I agree with the commissioner. I want you to know that everything's taken into consideration when this happens, and luckily it's only happened 3 times in the past 3 years. So everything is taken into consideration when they consider the threat matrix.
There was some hits that were canceled because of everything that you spoke about. But you wouldn't know about them,
right?
Yeah. Right. Like, because we knew children were going to come off the bus and stuff like that.
I'm just imagining, I know it would be added onto your workload, but, just to know that there was an officer that I saw storming in my door, also checking up on me after at 8 years old. You know what I mean? Things like that. Just, it'll take 15 minutes out of your day, even if you don't talk to the kid, for their mental health worker to know that you reached out to the mental health worker to make sure that this kid is talking to somebody, or that you come and squat down eye level after and explain to them, if you need something, we're here for you, because that's also community policing. It's not the funds that it takes to have somebody out on foot patrol. It's like seeing somebody at a basketball game and saying, oh, I'm your officer, I saw you the other day. You know what I mean? Those things are also community policing. It doesn't have to
I'm gonna publish a list policy. Every year in February I publish a list of all the involvement of the Hudson Police and the different charities and things that they do. I think you'd be surprised how much they do. They do quite a bit. Not that they can't do more, but I think people should be aware of how charitable the PBA is and the different programs.
Mostly when there's arrests.
Yeah, so I'll get something. I'd like to get something out maybe the next couple of days about, and the head of the union's right here now, all the charitable stuff and community involvement is more than I think people give them credit for.
And I just like to mention quickly, when I was Detective Sergeant, believe it or not, in our county we have a lot of juveniles that are victims of a lot of crimes, serious crimes. And HPD reached out, I can't talk publicly about these crimes because they're terrible crimes against these children. But we still know them by, we still in contact with them and to this day, that for years. So believe me, we're part of the community.
Our advocacy center, the thing that we have in this town, which is so great, is the advocacy center. CAC, and they do incredible work over there when we're talking about children in this community. Unfortunately, they're real busy, but they're wonderful people over there. And we
agencies that are on the front lines that could use the collaboration.
Yeah, yep, we involve with them quite extensively.
And let us look towards better communicating.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard for first responders. They're very humbled. And the good that they're doing, they don't communicate that well. So that's what I'm hearing you say is, wow, let's open up that communication and let's see what you guys are doing.
And actively listen to what the community is saying. And before you decide what, like, charitable events, mm-hmm. awesome. But what do we need from you? Like, what does Lower Hudson want to see from you after this whole shared services thing yep. has put up another iron okay. curtain between us and you?
We could work on that, absolutely.
Communication, mm-hmm. getting rid of the stigma of it's us against them, that mentality, because you know Hudson is a community. That's what I'm saying. Not just having somebody on the beat, but training some officers. You know, I'm gonna just say, training some officers to smile once in a while. Train some officers to really be engaged with the community. Just you don't want to come in with a RoboCop approach with community, because we in this together. You know, so we want them feeling comfortable with the police coming down, not just, uh-oh, here comes the police. So, I mean, we do have to bridge that gap, but, we have to have some dialogue. We have to figure out what we can do to, try to...
Let's struggle together.
Let's do it.
Let's struggle together. It's not going to be easy, but we'll work that together. And one thing I say wherever I am at any police agency, community conversations will lead to community solutions. If we need to have a hard conversation, let's have that hard conversation
right.
together. You hear from our perspective, we hear from your perspectives, and that's the only way to go to a solution. If we don't talk, there's no solution. There's none. So let's have these hard conversations, and that's something that we could make available. Just not on the street, but maybe you need to hear of the Hudson Police and all that we're doing,
yeah,
that I'm working on.
For the community, the shared services that comes in. I know what Clay was talking about with the traumatization
mm-hmm.
of that whole situation. I mean, there was an incident where a little girl did have a gun pointed at her, which, you know, I think that...
Where was this?
One of the raids. It was a raid.
On the raid in Columbus Street?
Was it Columbus?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that...
I'm not familiar, that's why I asked.
No, never heard of that?
No, I'm shocked right now.
Yeah, this is something that was...
When did this happen?
I'm not sure. I'll get back to you, because I'm not sure exactly when, but it was a raid where the young man was I guess he was handcuffed, and the little girl had a gun pointed at her, and I don't know exactly when it was, but I'll get back to you.
It was in her direction, her memory of it.
Well, okay. Yeah, and that's what the community, and that's it. The community, they remember stuff like that. And so my question was, with the shared services, I mean, are they able to, have a dialogue with you guys and say, hey, you know, when you come in with these raids, we have to be mindful of the traumatization of our communities. And this is our community. You know, this is, you know, we know things have to get done, but, you know, just... That full force tactics, I know it requires certain things that they have to do, but we have to have some empathy and some just some concern.
And let's make a verbal contract right now that if something like that happens with any officer, that we need to know, I need to know, Chief needs to know, because we'll have that tough conversation there, because police, we're human beings, and if we're making a mistake, we'll own up to it. And we'll correct that. And that's what I've learned over my life is that, and I'll just tell you from the shared services and the officers that I know that, if there was a tactical error, they need to know that to retrain. So that's that community conversation that needs to happen immediately.
Well, that's where community policing comes in, because they build that trust.
Absolutely. And so we'll work on that. That's something we're going
to
work on.
Like if something like that happened and it came to administration, what we would do is an internal affairs investigation and find out, because that obviously what you say there sounds awful, and we would get to the bottom of it. But that, to me, like what you're telling me right now, is the first I'm hearing about it.
Okay.
So I don't know if you're talking about something that happened 10 years ago.
No.
I agree completely with Alderman Walker and what Clear Cousin said in the audience. Now, I did request that from former Commissioner Graziano, because people were always saying the police drive by, particularly people born and raised in this community, drive by, evil look, evil stare, and it's like, say hello, it doesn't hurt. You know, totally wholeheartedly agree with both of you. And I wanted to ask the question. Recently, there was a shooting that took place up the street. Were shared services involved? Because I've read the paper that the mayor just extended more Hudson police on, in the area.
No, we talked to the mayor. We added patrols to State Street after that happened to just the community, the neighborhood, an idea that we were out there. But that was not involved with shared services.
And I would recommend wholeheartedly, completely, to please look at your tactics pertaining to children with raids, and even having that communication with the media. A lot of the community was extremely disturbed from seeing people that we know, their children in the newspaper and the interaction with the police, and it wasn't good.
And I'm hearing, right.
Where was that? Where? Where?
Next to
by the high school?
Area? No, next to Dunkin' Donuts. That was out of our jurisdiction. I know what you're talking about, Healy.
That was in Greenport.
Right. It's
shared
that was
services.
But right, but I'm just saying for
Greenport
administration.
Right.
Right.
I don't know. That's the same incident.
So what I'm hearing you saying is we could look at better ways to communicate. So once an incident is completed, how do we communicate to the community? Whether it is going to, we put a plan together through the elected officials, and then you go to your ward. But that's something in today, this is a conversation we need to have is, but we have to, you have to understand that when we're going to these high impact events, nobody knows anything for the protection of everybody, including the officers and the people involved. Now, once it's secured, and investigations continue, that's a way that we could try to work out a way to communicate this incident has happened, everything is secured, you know, then people reading about it in the newspaper.
It could be boom, right? Kids in the room. We
can
have
happen.
Kids here, and that officer stays with those children while the rest are doing their job with the rape. We could,
that's tactics that the aftermath, and that's what I'm hearing from everyone. You're not arguing that there is a need, specific need for everyone's safety for this specialized training, but what I'm hearing is the
you
aftermath,
guys have
if we,
like
we could do that.
Trauma-informed care training when you guys are in
yes.
doing most specialized training?
We could work on that. I'm a social worker, so I
have them right now. But
the trauma-informed training is for clinicians, so we could work on making that specifically for officers. And bringing that there. So I could work on that.
Our own police department is doing a fine job. That's just
thank
me personally.
And we might even create something where we call social services afterwards, once everything's secured, to advise them. There's a lot of different avenues through the Mental Health Association. There's so many different, I think, organizations that could help our community afterwards to have that, if there is that trauma. From policing, but the reality is policing is sometimes ugly. You know, there are times when there's just no way around it. It's ugly. So we try to get it done and then just move on from the ugliness of policing.
All right, Chief, you talked about, we're talking about one aspect of shared training. You talked about the ropes. Now, isn't also, we have a trailhead, we have woods, isn't part of that also search and rescue, wilderness training, and access to a mule, a drone, or whatever to, if a child is lost or somebody's lost,
yeah.
can activate it.
Yeah, I think we've been talking a lot about raids, but what the team does is multifaceted. Donnie Kraft's sitting right behind you, he's one of the team leaders. They've been trained in high angle rope rescue. They have a higher level of first aid, trauma training, tactical training for all these bad things that can happen. Not just taking a warrant and clearing someone out of a house. They're trained on a much level. And I do want to give, in this conversation, I do want to acknowledge that these guys, in the four or five that we have on our team now, they have to stay physically fit. They have to go, they're not doing this for the money, obviously. They're putting themselves at risk. There's real guns out there, real shootings in our town, real dangerous people, fentanyl in these raids. We should be fortunate to have four or five people in our department that are willing to take on this extra level of training, this extra risk. It's a risky enough job to start with, but to take on an additional burden.
They volunteered.
They volunteer, and I have a lot of admiration for these guys. We want to be trained well. We want to get along, obviously, with the community that we serve. But these guys go through a lot monthly. Some of them have been on the team for years, have been training for years, just for the opportunity that someday, hopefully, we never have to use them. So I wanted in this conversation to at least acknowledge these things, that I really am thankful for them, that they'd be willing to do this. You know, and just from my last sentence on this here, services team, what the city council decides to do, whether to remain in the team or not, always consider what the alternative would be.
Are those paid trainings?
Pardon?
Are those paid trainings?
Yes. A lot of people, like, even can't even make the team. They're just not strong enough. They can't do it. They don't make the qualifications. It's really serious kind of stuff, and they take it serious. So when I hear what you guys are saying, but believe me, it's a very professional team.
With those five that passed, did they get a pay increase?
No. There's a stipend for all specialized training that's a member from the contract, but it's
like
not
$200
bucks. It's $200, I think.
A year.
At this point, since I'm hearing it's a yearly contract, it's not a four-year contract, I would recommend let's just stay with a yearly contract, and because at this point the service is a necessary component. As we look at that contract, I'm sure if there's anything we need adjustments in, we could do that, but I think it's more of a policy we're going to look at to see what we can do in the aftermath. One year.
Just have one comment. The 218 was large military machines. And, you know, it was a very aggressive military action on... I was in my neighborhood and witnessed it. And I think that's really to be careful and cautious of how those are used. That, I think, is what the community is concerned.
I agree.
We want everybody to be safe, but there's also the militarization of police departments, and this isn't a new conversation, is a concern of this community, and it's been voiced before. So thank you.
The conversation that you're having in Tiffany is the same when they sit down before they do these things. I just want you to know, the same thing that you're saying comes out of these mouths, saying, Jesus, your kids are doing.
And I also think, Linda,
we just want to share this side of the table. So
right. I 100% I acknowledge that what could happen on a dirt road in Austerlitz and with certain equipment and stuff could go unnoticed, as here in the middle of Columbia Street would be a whole different thing, a whole different community reaction.
I get it. And instead of a year, as we discussed, why wouldn't it be less than a year? So that way, from the concerns that you're hearing tonight and the concerns that you hear on a daily basis for the community, that way it would give you time to make those changes rather than have the community upset and feeling like, look, they didn't do this, they didn't change that, it's for a year, we're stuck. Like, couldn't you shorten the time limit and then take a look at it and maybe advance it or leave it the same? But at least you gave you all that opportunity and the community to get engaged.
The problem with that I see is, and I just have found, the commitment needs to be a year, because it's not just us. It's the other teams that with the specialized training. So if we commit to 4 months, if we commit to 6 months, that means the other municipalities that are putting money into this, just like we are, to make this happen, that changes everything. So if we commit to a year, we would need to notify them in 4 months from now to 6 months from now, we're not going to do it. Because if we turn around right today and say our four officers are not available, that changes and puts a lot of pressure on the other municipalities on what are they going to do now to fill that void of specialized training. There's a responsibility that when we went to contract with this, and now there's a responsibility, okay, if we're looking to get out of it, we need to give them time to train other people. So it leaves a void that I'm very concerned about if we back out.
Yeah,
it's a void for the other communities too, because we locked in saying we're going to commit to this. So that's my only concern with that. So instead of a 4-year, I would not say a 4-year commitment. The 1 year is enough that 4 or 5 months from now, if we make that decision, we give them 4 or 5 months to train 4 other people so they can continue on to do what they need to do in their communities. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's why I would think that. And we can still have this community conversation. So we can tell them 6 months from now, we will tell you if we're going to commit to the next year.
So if you want to change it to 6 months or whatever it is, please, as a council, do some fiscal research and find out how much it's going to cost if we don't have this shared services response team and what it's going to do to the overtime and the police budget. Because just as a layperson sitting here, it sounds like it would be astronomical if it were to be overnight, and then we would have to have all these people trained to fill the void that is now the state regulation. And of course, you wouldn't have, I'm sorry, shaking your head, but then you wouldn't have control over it either. So that would be something that you would have to bear that burden.
Just one, it's not on this subject, but I'm confused about the vote. Who's responsible for changing that? The legal committee?
Mayor.
At least they said
mayor. No, it's not us. Mayor. It's the law.
Lawmakers.
The mayor.
So the mayor does, not the legal committee?
In the past, it's been the mayor, whether that is correct or not.
Thank you.
So correct me if I'm wrong. The last time the shared service, the last 2 times the shared services was utilized, was it from a raid?
Yeah, the last one. Yeah.
From the raid, right?
Well,
no, we don't know. They get utilized a lot outside our jurisdiction.
No. I meant for us.
In Hudson, yeah.
In Hudson, yes. Right?
Yeah.
It just happened to be raid.
And I asked, what if we didn't have the shared services, and you said that the state would come in, but it would, you know, that's a time management ordeal.
Right.
But with a raid, isn't it, I mean...
No, a lot of times, especially in a drug warrant or a search warrant, there's a timeliness there. It has to do with the purchase of drugs, when the person's in the premises, you know? So a lot of times time is an issue to be factored. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of times you don't have the luxury of planning, you know, a day ahead of time or something like that. Juwan, may I ask one question? Donnie Kraft is a team leader. I just wondered perhaps if he wanted to say anything. Do you have anything you want to add, Don?
We talked a lot about SWAT things here tonight. And I just want to, first of all, thank everyone here who has allowed this team to exist. The members from Hudson who are part of this team affect a much greater area than just Hudson. And they do get notoriety for that. I mean, we do large-scale events where they need security, where we're just in the background where no one sees us, but if something like the Vegas shooting happens at a concert over on the mountain, Hunter, we're there. They protect people's lives, and that's our number one goal here, is protect life. We're not going in there, you know, trying to beat people down or anything. That is not what we do. We're here to help people. We're here to rescue people. We're the guys who the police call when they need help. So I'd like to thank, you know, the council and the chief and the new commissioner and lieutenant up there for even being a part of this team. These guys put their heart and soul in this team. They live, eat, and breathe this stuff because we can't make mistakes. We don't have the ability to make mistakes in what we do. So this is a very serious decision you guys have to make, and I wouldn't want to be up there where you guys are sitting right now. But we do a lot of things. We do a lot more than just certain warrants. We're out there repelling. We're doing this on a monthly basis, practicing, training to help recover people's loved ones who have fallen off cliffs or had some other demise that they needed rope rescue, or we would have to leave them in a location for several days otherwise. We didn't have this team available. We're doing wildlife rescues where someone gets lost in the woods, whether it's an autistic person or someone with mental disabilities, or just a hiker out there who gets hypothermia, is lost. We're training that. We have medical training. And this is a highly qualified team. I mean, we get training from the Department of Homeland Security, which is free cost to the department. This is something that normal teams don't get. This year, run-of-the-mill average police officer on the street who's out there doing a great job. He's not going to get this kind of training. So the three entities came together, and they created a fantastic thing. I've been on the job for 22 years. I've been doing task force for 18. And I can tell you the level of skill that's going into this team compared to when I started 18 years ago is immensely different. So obviously, this is what I do. This is I'm a commander of the team. I take it seriously. I think it's a necessary thing, but again, I just want to say that the times you guys have been involved in this, I can't thank you enough, and it's saved probably more lives than you guys have ever known, and more than enough. So again, thank you.
Of the vote, I'm going to request and ask the police committee to bring the concerns of our constituents to the mic about the vote. And as far as the police goes, everyone appreciates what you do. You made that decision to become a police officer and put your life on the line. Those were your decisions, and the community appreciates it. But please don't try to make us feel guilty because it's what you guys decided to do. But we appreciate the work that you do, and that's why we would like to see the police more involved in the community.
Let's work on those conversations. And yes. Sometimes they're going to be tough conversations we're going to have, but we'll struggle together. I found that when I went into Chatham. I found that when I went into Stockport. No community's perfect. And no police department's perfect. So let's take our imperfections and try to better the world that we're living in.
And I love what you said. You make mistakes, you own up to them.
Yeah. I've learned that in life. That's part of my recovery, and so I just learned that. Humility is a wonderful thing. And I think the best way to deal with pain and suffering is with compassion. And the history of people who know me understand who I am, and that's what I'm about. And that there's a lot of compassion in this.
One question.
I have, if I may, a comment. My name is Irene. And 2 years ago, actually, the current mayor and I were involved in a 9-month-long, and a lot of people in this community were involved in a 9-month-long community project. And the group that the mayor and I were involved in, I was called Promise Neighborhoods, making communities better for children and families, specifically State Street and Lower Warren. And we have a lot of material that our group came up with around police interaction with community, the betterment of those relationships. We sat and talked to Chief Moore, Lieutenant Miller. We talked to the community many, many times, had a lot of input, lots of trainings, exactly. So I want to say I have all those materials, and a lot of legwork was done 2 years ago. We sat and I remember interviewing Mr. Baltman, with another member of the team. So I would like to make that information available again if the conversation is going to begin.
More?
Yeah. Bill Houston, 558 State Street, Kindness for Baltman, welcome.
Thank you.
Chief, one of the reasons I came here tonight is to ask you questions, as I always do, but also, I heard the gunshots 2 weeks ago, basically in my backyard. I'm really disappointed that he didn't mention it during the meeting. And I'm just wondering if it's wrong of me to expect you to at least mention the fact that there was a shooting after the last meeting, 2 weeks ago, even if you don't have an update about it, just to acknowledge it.
Isn't that the one we just discussed about whether the SWAT team was deployed?
Yes, yeah. Because she brought it up. I'm just saying, in the regular part of the meeting, can we expect if there's a shooting that you're going to bring it up? Whether there's information you have, additional information you have on it?
Beyond the press release I gave?
I guess, yeah.
It's an ongoing investigation that detectives and investigators are currently.
I mean, I did do a press release. I did do a press release.
In case anybody doesn't know, there was a shooting last Sunday, la-di-da, and we don't have any more information right now.
That's exactly what I put in the paper.
Oh, well, I don't read the paper.
I put it on Facebook.
I don't do Facebook.
Well, well, Jesus, Bill, I would want you to send you a telegram.
Have you mentioned a shooting at the meeting?
I think they stopped at his door.
Okay.
All right. My next question for Mr. Bowman.
Were you, when you interviewed as part of the community canvas after that shooting?
Mr.
Yeah.
What does that have to do with it?
Well, you knew about it.
I'm asking for an update. I'm wondering why there's no update.
You said you didn't know a minute ago. Well,
okay.
You know, yeah.
Mr. Bowman.
Yes.
I think, as far as I understand, one of your roles is dealing with traffic control devices. Is that right? TCDs?
But it's part of the police.
Signs.
Right.
But you're the go-to guy instead of chief now. Is that correct? Or do you know?
In, yes. Overall, in the department operations, I am ultimately responsible for everything that includes traffic control.
Okay. So
I've taken that responsibility.
And you'll have to be working with Rob Perry? Is that...
With the department, yes. I'm not specifically working with individuals. I'm overseeing with the responsibility of what the administration's doing. And
okay.
I'll take responsibility for the administration of what.
So if somebody wants a stop sign at a corner, you're the guy to go to. Is that correct? Rob Perry? Chief?
I'm overseeing. What happens is when there's a stop sign or any type of traffic control device, it's a collaboration between the police and DPW. Because DPW knows there's a lot of regulations with street signage that we don't know all those regulations, so we collaborate.
As I understand it from the code, your responsibility, you're the go-to guy for signs, crosswalks, and all that stuff. Is that correct?
Ultimately, once they have a need and they want to make action, ultimately, yes, I'm responsible. But I don't do the background on making that action happen. As a commissioner, my job is not day-to-day operations in controlling that. My day is controlling strategic planning, controlling personnel, and ultimately overseeing the department and approving things that include traffic control devices. So I am ultimately responsible for every officer's actions. Yes.
So you will be having to deal with Rob Perry at some point, I presume, if there's...
We're not going to have a specific... We don't have specific... meetings on this. No. I approve once the department has meetings with Rob Perry, once they come, then I approve.
Bill, what's the question?
So what's the question? Yes.
I think I asked you the question. I just wanted to know if you were going to be involved with traffic control devices.
Ultimately, yes. With approvals. I approve I have the ultimate approval because I'm ultimately responsible.
Involved in them anymore?
Yes. He is involved in all that. Yes.
And my last quick question for Mr. Bowman is, are you available by phone, by email? Do you have an office here? What's the?
I'm available by email. It's police commissioner.
New York.
Yeah, that's a Hudson police. Yeah, through the .org. I just don't have that off the top of my head right now. But yes, ultimately, yes. You can contact me through email. We could sit down and have a meeting. Okay.
No more public comments. This Saturday, Polar Punch. You guys ready for it?
Yeah, as far as jumping in, we'll have a detail there.
I'm not doing that.
The commissioner volunteered to be the first guy. Yep. Okay, we have a detail scheduled. Right.
I just wanted to say I would really appreciate finding out more about the de-escalation, the trainings that could happen more with trauma. Like, what are the options for the force that are not currently being exercised to do?
I could provide options that's out there and standards that are out there, not just in New York State but around the country. I do that. That's
great.
What I do.
No,
I train around the country. With that specific stuff. So, yes, that's something that I could provide to you. If we'll just see afterwards and get your email address.
The whole committee would probably like to hear more about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm imagining.
We could work on that. Absolutely, we could work on that.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's cool. I wonder who's that was. Live streaming on the local radio station. All our meetings now. Just with this little device.
Isn't technology?
It is. But it doesn't mean I have to go to every meeting. I don't mind that.
Oh, okay.
I have to anyway, really. Oops, that's being brought.